May 1st, a holiday, if you will, for the entire world, not just here in America. International Workers' Day, also known as May Day, celebrates not just work. Now, it's not like a Labor Day. It's the right to work.
Right.
It's essentially a real celebration of some of the things that have happened in terms of workers and the plight of workers, organized labor.
The rights of workers and the right to work and the importance of work in the role of civilization and living in community with others.
And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Our resident philosopher, Al Jeany, in studio. He is a professor at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. He's also the author of My Job, Myself, Work and the Creation of the Modern Individual. And we thought we would talk about that tonight. Professor, good to see you. Thanks for being
wonderful
here.
Wonderful to be here. Always good. After that wonderful, spirited political conversation, I feel like cleaning up afterwards.
All right, so let's talk about this, because it is different. This holiday is different than the American Labor Day,
right,
which is really almost a celebration. You have to work, therefore we...
It is a self-celebration that America... that we really made ourselves. In a very real sense, America is a nation of immigrants and entrepreneurs. We came here. We created a nation. We created a way of life. We're the richest country in the world. We're still an 800-pound gorilla that everybody wants to be like for all of our problems. But this is our self-celebration. Hey, aren't we wonderful? And I've made this with my own hands. It's like my father saying to us, we had to be there at a Sunday meal. And because that was the only meal he shared with us, because he worked late. He wanted to be able to say, and my grandfather, I paid for this. I worked for this. And let us celebrate together. Tutti mangiare lo same. We all eat together. But I think May 1st is Workers' Day. It is the right of work. It's what Pope John Paul was talking about, Laborum Exercens, where we were talking about Rerum Novarum with Leo X, that people have a right to work as individuals. That is a God-given right and a natural requirement in order to have a better life. And so people need work, and they need work that offers dignity and a living wage. And then something called the United Nations comes along and writes to the United Nations Rights of Man. And in that as well is the right to work and the right to a fair wage. And there's something else, too, that's implied but not always specified, the right not to work, the right to have time off to enjoy the work.
Well, that plays out here in Chicago, of course, the eight-hour workday sort of conceived after
right,
with
within
Haymarket
miles
and everything.
Of where we're
yeah.
sitting right now.
You know, it's such an interesting part, because it's even joking around. I mean, Roe was joking around with me, just sort of like, oh, the communist holiday.
Right.
Like this idea of, but it's much more, it goes much deeper than
well,
sort of
this.
Well,
it is a communist holiday. What they did is they took the European notion and the basic notion of federation, the Catholic notion of the right to work. I mean, you could have any problem you want with the Catholic Church, but you can't complain about the Catholic Church in regard to its teachings, in regard to the rights of human beings and the right to work. And what the Russians did was made the worker, and of course, the worker is soldier too, you know.
Right.
So they made the soldier and the labor of workers to make this incredible army and march these missiles and tanks down the street. But it's at its core really the celebration of individual and collective work and the rights of human beings for work.
You know, it's one of these holidays as well, as we've seen this more and more in recent memory and more of contemporary society, where you're seeing other issues that are
yeah.
that are human being issues, whether it be immigration, women's issues, sort of tied together. You see
right.
the march tonight that went downtown to,
right.
from Daley Plaza all through the loop. There's so many different factions. Where does that come from? Where's the idea that all these sort of social issues are tied together?
Well, I think the social issues are the latest guys down the block, if you will. I mean, social issues come, you know, it's the famous notion of Bertolt Brecht, grub first, you know, leisure later. So you got to take care of food first. And I think that we didn't worry about that. Remember, the 8-hour work thing came at the in the middle of the Industrial Revolution, some sense here, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours to do what we will. Well, it's only really existed in the society in a very short period of time.
Yeah, right.
And certainly World War II changed that, the Depression changed that, everything has changed that, and now we put in too many hours at work, and so you get millennials saying, I want to work, but whoa, let's slow this down a little
bit. We're going to get to that.
They get to that, right. But the reality is, once we established, once we established this rich country, we began to say, okay, it can't just be work. What else is there besides work? I don't want to just be defined by the fact that I'm a worker, and work does define us. What else is there? And now we're talking about, I think with, she was just in town this week, Sheryl Sandberg, talking about, you know, I was a little bit wrong in Lean In. Maybe we also have to lean out. Maybe we have to talk about how do we blend work with real life. And
it's a great philosophical question, Al, yeah. and that's what we're going to talk about. We'll take a break here. But, the question is, as we sort of celebrate the idea of the right to work.
Right.
And you said also the right to not work. Because there is a work-life balance.
Yeah.
And you're seeing more and more like a push with the sort of high-tech, the world that we live in now, that work it somehow is us. Like, it is everything.
It always
it's
has
due.
Been, but now
right.
we're much more aware of
but,
it.
But and maybe at a certain point we need to go backwards to say some of the things that we learned in the turn of the century, in the 19th century, give you a little bit of idea that possibly we want to get back to the idea of a work-life balance.
Yes.
All right, Al Genie in studio. He is a resident philosopher here on The Download. He's also a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. He's also the author of My Job, Myself, Work, and the Creation of the Modern Individual. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll continue our conversation about work on this May Day. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, our resident philosopher, Al Genie. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. Joins us from time to time here on the download to talk about big, big societal issues.
Big issues.
We don't do the little stuff.
No.
We leave the little stuff to a different hour.
Another hour.
He's also the author of My Job, Myself, Work, and the Creation of the Modern Individual. We're talking, of course, today about May Day, International Workers' Day. We saw some rallies today in Union Park and also a march downtown. You know, but really it's about the right to work and, as you said, the right to not
right.
work. I have a question just about a history lesson. I know that you've covered this in the book and other places. But, you know, when you think about the Haymarket riot and the movement here in Chicago, the modern labor movement, to essentially get 8 hours on, 8 hours off, 8 hours in the week or weekends
for
off. Right?
For what you will.
For what
for
you will.
Will.
So the question I have is that something that that we had to change as human beings, meaning you go all the way back in the centuries and we understood work-life balance and then we lost sight of it and then we get to the turn of the 20th century and you're like, oh, we got to remember to
well,
do this, or is that brand new?
Right. No, I think we have to look at the human condition as a project in development. Just so we're talking about, you know, new
sure.
electronics, what we have in our pockets right now are not phones, they're computers with a phone app.
Right, right.
It's a portable computer. You could do anything with that wonderful thing. And when we think about this, the lifespan of the human beings and the lifespan of civilization, work is developed according to the technology of the times. So in agrarian societies, and when there was a lush society, like in the growing season in Egypt and the growing season in Middle Europe, the Italians and the Romans talked about this, you didn't work constantly because you were committed to a certain life cycle.
To a harvest
life,
or whatever.
Harvest time.
Right, right.
So there was rush, push, then you were forced to be inside, so on and so forth. And in fact, the Romans had over 280 holidays. If that's possible in a 500-day period, I just don't understand that. They, you know, was that a whole day off, et cetera, et cetera? And so I think that when you're talking about agrarian society, I think what we understand about work really starts to rev up with the Industrial Revolution and the abuses of the Industrial Revolution.
So essentially when the technology catches
yeah, the
up
technology
and you're like,
remember,
we can make stuff faster, right. make these workers work
Marx
harder.
Marx isn't a communist. Marx is a critic of the work situation. Marx is a critic of the abuse of labor, of the abuse of workers. And he's talking about the right of the worker to have a life larger than work and not to be owned by the organization that he works for, that he or she works for. And it was both men and women. Now listen, we're sitting in Chicago. Upton Sinclair wrote The Jungle. You had to read it in high school and I had to read it in college and I assigned it to students. It's still the Bible of one generation after another, one group of immigrants after another comes to the south side of Chicago, starts to work in the slaughterhouses, and is used up by the slaughterhouses until they themselves are slaughtered either physically or psychologically and can't work anymore. And they were talking, if you remember the opening scene, they're planning a wedding or the opening part of the book. Well, it's a Saturday night, but they're working to 5 o'clock and they're rushing to get clean to go to the wedding and they got to work the next day. You know,
well, I mean, and you hear the story. I mean, obviously, with the Pullman porters
right.
and this, the other stories of factory workers at the turn of the century.
Absolutely.
You know, I guess the question I have is when I think about advocating for a work-life balance,
right.
and that's really what the movement was predicated here in Chicago.
Right.
Was that to sort of stem the tide of abuses in the
yeah,
workplace,
stem the tide
or is it more about, hey, listen, I think I should have more fairness. I should be 8, 8, and 8.
No. I think it's to stem the tide of abuses and to say enough already. Basta, I want to stop this right now. And that only could happen in a kind of a post-subsistence a society that's not just based on one industry, not just agrarian. And so people began to say, And you think about that. Adam Smith said the only purpose of production is consumption. Well, if all they're doing is working, they didn't have time to consume. They didn't have the money to consume. Remember, Henry Ford did two major things in regard to the industry. He, 5-day work week and $5 day, because his workers couldn't afford the products that they were making. And so I think that what we're talking about here is the notion of more life than simply work,
right,
is a mid-19th century phenomena that grows up in Europe, in many different places, and then here in America and the union movement.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting too, as technology continues to progress, and like you just said about the phones and small computers and the way that we view work, and even Sheryl Sandberg talking about leaning in, there almost seems to be a return to the idea of this identification or this identity of where you work or who you are and what you do.
Yeah.
You know, almost more than, and maybe we were moving away from that, but at a certain point you're seeing more of this sort of like, I'm attached to my work. I have to work because I got to keep up. I got to check my email at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I have to tell you, I think we've always been branded by our work. Tu sai quello che fai, tu sai quello che mangi. You are what you eat, you are what you do in some sense. And so people got identity from work. May have been a bad identity. I'm shoveling stuff in Alabama. I'm a garbage person. Hey, garbage person, you don't call it anymore. Call it sanitation engineer because they make a certain amount of money and et cetera,
good
et cetera,
money,
right? But I think we've always been labeled by that. But now we're reasserting that I've always been labeled by that, but I want more than that label. I need more than that. And that's where people are asserting. And by the way, there's enough distributive income. You know, when you talk about people who have more than one job, it's because they need that second job. Nobody wants to work three part-time jobs.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, 57% of those people are women who are taking care of families. But you do this. I think we were talking about this before with health insurance. Health insurance is a major issue in the workplace. You know, what are my benefits right now? And I think one of the benefits of work is I have to have the right not to always be working. I have to have the right to be making a living wage so that I could step away from work. And by the way, just so it's always clear, I think every benefit in the workplace comes out of the union movement, no matter how bad the unions are generated, no matter what happened to them, no matter the fact that less than
12%. The idea that there's anything standardized is because of that movement.
That people have time off, that you have the weekend. There's such a thing as a weekend that never really existed. I mean, I travel in countries where it's Saturday or Sunday. So how do you tell? Because you know, in Africa, you can't tell, because it's just another day that people work and have to work. So I think in a post-subsistence economy, we begin to ask the questions, is there more to life than work?
Well, let me ask about that. 847 just texted, and I think she hits on an appropriate part about, you know, we see all the time with these unemployment numbers or employment numbers, they go up, they go down, and then you'll hear the politicians say, well, it's not accurate because a lot of people aren't looking for work anymore. What about people? I mean, not just the sort of the financial stress it takes to not have a job, but the mental or psychological part of not being identified by your workplace.
Oh, I think it's huge. Not only, you know, think about it. We get status, stuff, success, and identity from work. All those things, you know, tell me your zip code and I'll tell you your general, your financial bracket, right? Mm-hmm. Not your telephone number. You can get that. That could be any place, but tell me your zip code and I'll say something. I could make a pretty educated guess about, you know, how much you make or what you do, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we really do get that
work
that,
is the those, same way. Yeah.
Work the same way. And I think we want more than that. To come back to your question, I think we need, the identity is there, but we want more than that. And it only happens when there's that pause when you say, I am making enough. Now what do I do? And that's the real question.
Well, I mean, do you have to start to rethink the way that we are, as you say, as we're a human race
that's continuing
to progress? Do you have to start thinking about ways that we can start to identify ourselves without work because the work field has changed and we're not necessarily
I think we have to
employed anymore?
And this is something we're going to do, I think, in the next show. We're living longer. Now what do we do? You know, I can't tell you my age because my wife will be furious, but I'm in my mid-70s. And the reality is I still have a job and I have no plans to retire at the moment, et cetera, because I'm still enjoying the job. Well, like quit the job, you bet. But the reality is if we're going to live longer, I just mentioned to you off air, if you were born in 2000, what the geneticists are suggesting and the biologists are suggesting, you'll probably live to 100. Well, you can't retire at 65. You got enough money to make it to 100?
So it almost is going to make what we were just talking about, by trying to adjust the way we're identified, it's going to put more pressure on what you do because you have to do it longer.
But what we have to learn to do is we have to work at not working. That is, we're going to have to work at leisure. We're going to have to figure out who am I now that I no longer job? Who am I that I'm no longer a professor? Who am I that I no longer have a rostrum to speak from? Who am I now that I no longer write the novels? I'm reading a biography of Churchill right now, and he lived to 91. And what he missed the most after the stroke when he was 82, I believe, he lost some of his language skills. And Winston Churchill was brilliant.
He's an orator,
and 57
right.
books, et cetera, and a Nobel laureate in literature. He was brilliant, and he dictated that, and he lost those literary skills, and he knew it, and it pained him immensely, because his words were his life.
Professor Al Genie in studio tonight. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get an update on Rob's news, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit about the different generations, you know, because there seems to be a difference in the way that work is viewed from baby boomers to millennials, as we know now, or as Steve Gadlin calls them, millenniums, here on the download. Al Genie, resident philosopher here on the download, professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago, also the author of My Job, Myself, Work and the Creation of the Modern Individual. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get Rob's news, and we'll continue the conversation here on May Day with Professor Al Genie. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Coming up a little bit later this hour, Adam Hoge is going to join us. WGN Radio's Bears reporter. Going to walk us off the ledge, give us some positive. He did a great story today on WGNRadio.com. He did his 10 thoughts, really breaking down how it all, you know, there's this myth that the 49ers are geniuses, you know, for being able to get the Bears to move to 2. And Adam kind of pushes back a little bit that, you know, there's a lot of luck that's involved in this stuff. And one thing goes this way and one thing goes that way. And the 49ers go from heroes to goats. And, you know,
absolutely.
And that the Bears draft is not as bad as you think. So we will talk about that coming up.
I agree.
Professor Al Genie in studio with me. He is a resident philosopher here on the download, also the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago, and the author of My Job, Myself, Work and the Creation of the Modern Individual. Al, of course, here for May Day, International Workers Day. We're talking about the right to work. You know, and a lot of what we were talking about in the first half, and we continue here, has to do with sort of meaningful work.
Right.
You know, it's not just sort of like clocking. Right. It's how the identity and surrounding. Talk about what does that mean? What is meaningful work?
Well, meaningful work always depends on a lot of things. If we say that work gives you status, stuff, and success, meaningful work depends on the individual as well. What are your talents? What can you do? You know, the problem is if work molds us and forms us, that if we have stupid, monotonous work, we become stupid and monotonous.
Right.
But I think meaningful work is there's been some basic definitions. It's about the skill set that you have. I mean, the unhappiest people I've met in the workplace and doing these surveys over the years are people who get the job they've always wanted, but they can't do it. And Bull Durham is a perfect example of that, right? If I had hit the ball four more times, I could have stayed in the bigs. And, you know, I would have been batting 250, but he couldn't make that ball four more times. And so to finally get the job that you really want, but you can't do it, is very frustrating. But I think when they're talking about it's about talent, ability, lack of repetitiveness, lack of stupidity, obviously, but that your skill set fits and you find dignity in it. And of the surveys they've been doing for years and years and years on what they want, people want for meaningful work, here are the five, top five. The only one thing has moved in it. First one is interesting work. We want work that it's engaging and that's meaningful. And that could be anything. You know, what do you make? I make hula hoops. Well, that's not very interesting. Well, it is for me because that's my skill set, you know. And I always talk about this, and I say this very, very carefully. The Down syndrome individuals who work at Jules and Dominic's. I've had a cousin who worked there for 40 years, Dominic's. He was happiest. That was his skill set. He was in the right place at the right time, and that was wonderful. Appreciation and recognition for what you do.
Right.
Somebody says,
huge
good job. You know, you're really good job. Secondly, your boss and your fellow workers are supportive and worthwhile. Doesn't mean you don't disagree and all that, but there's a supportive workplace. Third, working conditions and proper tools. You know, just critical, you know, to be a teacher and not have chalk.
Right.
The chalkboard is gone, so on and so forth. And then solid salary. And I think solid salaries moved up to 3 or 4, but those are the top five that people want. They want something that they are involved in, engaged in, they feel is meaningful. And that's why the happiest people that I found to really celebrate their work are people that involve others, doctors, lawyers, actors, comedians, we know that, even though they're kind of manic depressive, we both know that sometimes, that they really enjoy, they're only alive on stage. And so, but that's meaningful for them. I think the happiest people that feel that they have really meaningful work are people that feel that there are, others are benefit from
the
work.
Do you see that at all adapting or evolving or adjusting when it comes to different generations? You know, are there like, is the idea that all of those things, the five things you just said for baby boomers, they have to be there, but for millennials, maybe they don't, or vice versa, meaning do you see it almost getting out of focus and blurry and distorted? I think of millennials and there's always...
I think all of us of generations, including the silent generation, my father's generation, my mother's generation, they wanted to be happy in work, but they had to take any work they could find because it was depression. So, you know, why are you doing this job? You ask a lot of dads, well, why are you doing this? I found out you paint on the side. Well, yeah, I wanted to be a painter, but then you came along and Mary came along and Billy came along and your mother wanted a house and I had to find a job. But I think the silent generation was happy of any work that you can get because work itself was dignity, even if they weren't happy at the work. I come home every day, I bring you the paycheck. Baby boomers, even though things were tough, remember this is after World War II, there weren't enough universities, everything was very competitive. We became goal-oriented and we saw our parents as hard workers. We became hard workers as well. I thought as a baby boomer, we'd all be smoking dope in California eating organic food. We're not. You know, we're not. What happened to the age of Aquarius? We're bankers. And we're lawyers and we're college professors, et cetera, et cetera. I think, but I don't really remember. But you know what I mean? I mean, that's really what we want to do. The baby boomers wound up being as diligent, but at a better level job than the silent generation. Right. Now, Generation X, our children, my children, unfortunately, your group of individuals, well, they saw us. They worked pretty hard, but they wanted to be a little more individualistic. They wanted to be a little more flexible. And they started to worry about a work-life balance. And you started to worry about your kids in a different way, you know. And I think that I think we gave you a little bit of that.
So, I mean, not unlike what the caller said, just this idea of, like, trying to find an identity outside of work.
Right, identity outside of itself. But the work became an important factor in driving you to take care of your children. So you wanted to be happy at work so you could be happy with them. You can't come home from 10 hours of drudgery and embarrassment and humiliation and say, let's forget about that. Let's play chess, make a gourmet meal, and have Olympiadic sex. It's just not going to happen, you know? it just not, you're just going to be, I want, bring me the bourbon or bring me the Blatz. You know, I want to get
I need a recliner.
And by the way, it's called exhaustion. You know, you have to have something left. And then the millennials, the younger people, you know, and by the way, the millennials of Generation X are now in charge of the workplace. It represents 68% of the workforce. And, you know, we're dying off and we're less than 29% of the workforce right now. They want to work with others. I think the problem with millennials, we really coddle them. You got a trophy even if you were in last place. They want to go right from, hi, I just got hired at Continental Bank, and now I'm president of Continental Bank.
Yeah, the only
but
way
they want
the
meaningful
push,
work from the beginning.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say. I push back on, the millennials I know followed the same suit.
Right.
They just say that there might be a different interpretation on what's good salary or appreciation or support from colleagues. They have a different understanding of what that means than your generation.
Absolutely, because we were willing to accept much, much lower
Maybe
pay.
They're just not taking it anymore.
They're not taking it anymore because they've been raised. I mean, what you have in millennials is Generation X children and actually my grandchildren saying, well, you live in an upper middle class house. That's how I want to start, too. Well, you know, that doesn't always happen. But the reality is, I think all of these, the labor force and all these generations really is now really looking for something beyond the paycheck. Yes, I want to make money, but I also want to do something that is personally satisfying and perhaps makes a contribution to others. And more I see that, and certainly Loyola's at the Quinlan School, we're very concerned about the whole person, not just an education, that a life for others is part of it. Because when Adam Smith, and I think he's much maligned, and I think he's abused in our understanding of capitalism, when he said the purpose of production is consumption, he meant we make things so people could have things, not simply for the selfishness of it, and that we make things because there's a joy in making them, and we all have a better life because of it.
It's always a pleasure, man. Always great to have you, Al.
It's a pleasure to be
with you. I can tell from the text and people that call in, they love listening to you here on the download. So I appreciate you coming in with these thoughtful ideas.
It's my pleasure, and it's my work, and because of that, I enjoy it.
Al Genie, the resident philosopher here on The Download, talking about May Day, International Workers' Day, the right to work and the right to not work here in human, not just here, but in around the world, human society. He's the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago, and also the author of My Job, Myself, Work, and the Creation of the Modern Individual. You can check out his page, algenie.net. Al, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
See you soon.